Great. Well, good morning to everyone, and welcome to our executive committee meeting. As you know, I'm Terry Hollingsworth, and we'll call the meeting to order at 8:36 today. And why don't we begin with the Pledge of Allegiance? Let's see.
I'll go ahead and put the flag up first.
Okay, got it.
It should be on the screen now.
I'm not seeing it.
No? Okay. Let me try again.
Okay. All right. Right hand over your heart. Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands,
one nation,
under God, indivisible,
liberty for all,
and justice for all.
Okay. A little out of sync, but that's fine. Well, great. All right. So now we're at the point of board member roll call.
Okay, I'll go ahead and begin that here. Terry Hollingsworth?
Present.
Present. John Luker?
I'm here.
Annalisa Lukes?
Present.
Barbara Mason?
Present.
Thank you. We do have a quorum.
Thank you so much. And any public comments today?
Let me go ahead and check the participants and attendees. If any of the attendees would like to make a comment, could you please use the raise hand function? One more quick announcement. If there are any attendees that would like to make a comment, please use the raise hand function. Okay, it doesn't look like we have any public comments.
Great, well, thank you so much. All right, moving on to our action items. So we have two items. Number five is the OC Workforce Development Board Subcommittee Non-Voting Member Guidelines. And Karma, would you like to give us some background on those guidelines?
Absolutely. So on May 4th, we reviewed the guidelines with the Business Services Committee. And from that review, we've made some amendments to this document. On May 6th, we've reviewed the committee, reviewed this document with the Youth Committee. And from that conversation, they've accepted the changes from the recommended changes from the Business Services Committee, but then had an additional add-on. And then finally, on May 13th, we reviewed this document with the One-Stop Oversight Committee, which they agreed with the recommended changes from the prior two board meetings, committee meetings, in addition to some high-level changes that they've requested. And if Adriana can pull up the screen, we'll go through the sections just to make sure that everyone is in alignment with the changes. My intention is to present the redline draft to the executive committee for vote, for approval, and then the final document to full board with all the edits finalized.
Well, I was about to do that, but for some reason, my version is in track changes.
It's supposed to be.
Oh, okay, great. I'll go ahead and share in just a second here.
Okay.
Is that on screen for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so we reviewed the document in its entirety with all three committees. The committees all decided to change the title to non-elected member guidelines. So instead of elect member, it's elected members. So you'll see through this red line document that we went through and changed everywhere it referenced non-elect members to non-elected members. The other change that we did is we removed the reference to the 20 CFR 681,000 through 681,120. Two reasons. One, because we've already highlighted that it's related to WIOA. And then two, because we also added other funding source as applicable. Because WIOA has more sections than just the 681 through 681,120, I felt that it wasn't necessary to quote that. Instead, just call out the entire WIOA law. So that's the second change you'll see in this document. The third change will be in the membership section, where we added the line right there in the middle where it says, with the exception of minors unable to register. So where we, in that section, call out that you have to be an Orange County resident and register to vote. We've added the exception because we are planning to have a youth on the youth committee. And they may not be able to vote because youth is ranging anywhere from 14 to 24. The other part we call out Orange County Workforce Development Board voting privileges. We just added reference the board to this. So those are the changes in this section. The next section we made changes was in the responsibility section. You'll see that we said new non-elected members shall receive an orientation packet to ensure an understanding of WIOA and the Orange County Workforce Development Board programs and services. So that came about during a discussion with the one-stop committee. So we add reference there. The next part where you'll see an additional change came from the Business Service Committee, where we call out required to attend corresponding standing committee meetings. So originally it said expected, we changed it to required. Let's see, the last section where, can you scroll down a little bit more, Adriana, where you see a change is that we added to the application, we've added, she added reference to the conflict of interest form. I think she should have added the word conflict, the Orange County conflict of interest form. So I need to tell her to fix that because it should actually say it. So I'll need to point that out to Erin that she referenced it, but she doesn't actually call it out. And I want to call it out in this document because the Business Service Committee requested that we have that as a part of the application process. And so I don't want to not call that out in this document. Other than that, those are the recommended changes to this document. And so at this time, I'd like to open it up for discussion. If there is no additional changes or questions or concerns, then I'd like to see if there's a motion to move forward.
Right. And Carmen, just to refresh my memory and maybe our memories, we currently do not have any non-elective members.
That is right.
Okay. And so what, once we approve this, what would be the process of recruiting and making it known to the public?
So what we could do is my team could draft a flyer, create a flyer so that you can share it with individuals who are interested in being non-elected members, very similar to the recruitment flyer that we use to recruit board members. So what we can do is draft a flyer that kind of talks about what we do as a board and that we're seeking non-elected members to provide input. And then maybe what we can do, I can talk to each chair about who they'd like to see or what kind of organizations would they like to see on their committee so that we can target it. So for example, maybe it says we're seeking a youth age 14 to 24 for the youth committee, maybe for the business committee, maybe I don't know exactly what you're going to be looking for, but if you're looking for a bank or you're looking for, a hospital, whatever it is that the committee wants to bring to the table to help them, we'll target that in that flyer.
Okay. Got it.
But I'd like to have some people present it by the next meeting.
Okay.
So our August meeting, I'd love to have a slate of candidates that you've all met with and agreed to bring to the board. So that would mean between now and August, we would do our recruitment. And then by the August meeting, hopefully vote on bringing those individuals in.
Got it. Any other questions regarding this particular guideline? So do we have a motion to approve the OC Workforce Board Subcommittee Non-Voting Member Guidelines?
A motion.
So moved.
A second?
A second.
Any abstentions?
Adriana is on mute. She has to do roll call with it. But I don't, she's muted right now, so she couldn't speak.
That's there we go. I'm sorry. I'll go ahead and start the roll call for the vote. Terry Hollingsworth?
Approved.
John Luker?
Approved.
Annalisa Lukes?
Aye.
And Barbara Mason?
Agree. Approved.
Okay, motion passes.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Now we're ready to move on to action item number 6, program grievance and compliance policy. Carmen?
So this policy was presented to the one-stop committee meeting or committee for review and approval. The intent of this policy is to have a documented procedure for program grievance or complaints. So if an individual who experienced had an unsatisfactory experience in the one-stop and believed that their civil rights might have been violated, it's important for us to have a procedure outlined on the steps that we take as a workforce development board to address the matter. And so this document basically supersedes a previous policy that Orange County had for grievance procedure or complaints. More recently than not, we've had some challenges with the one-stop center in terms of individuals that may not meet the code of conduct standards. So this policy complements that process. So if an individual wants to challenge the code of conduct standards, meaning that maybe they were asked to leave, but they felt like they were being, those civil rights were being violated by being asked to leave, they now have a process to follow and to address their concerns, so to speak. We reviewed this process with the state EDD, just to ensure that we weren't missing anything and to make sure that we were in compliance with EDD's guidelines, as well as the federal guidelines, as well as the, as well as what the county had in place. One of the requirements that EDD put in place is that the Workforce Development Board cannot participate in the grievance procedure. So we have to hire or use an outside party to conduct our hearings for us. So this policy includes that process. And that old policy had us involved in the complaint procedure, which it conflicted with EDD's policy where the board is not permitted to host or hold hearings. So this policy basically is a revision of a previous policy, but then it also includes all of the new requirements established by EDD and the WIOA law. Are there any questions or concerns about this policy?
This is Barbara. I'll just add, we talked about this in the one-stop committee meeting, and there are some checks and balances. There is an appeal process, and the is a neutral party from a different county's workforce board that will hear the complaint.
Okay.
So there are some good checks and balances built into the system.
So who typically is that neutral third party?
We've asked Riverside Workforce Development Board and San Diego Workforce Development Board to host our hearings for us, so it's not us. So there's arm's length distance from that process. Now, if Riverside or San Diego are not available, then we will use another county agency outside of OCC, our division, Community Investment Division. So we may use libraries, our parks, or a pet adoption agency to manage our hearing versus it being us, so that we, like I said, so we have arms and distance. We want to ensure that no one feels that they were unfairly treated during the process and that there was no interest in it for us, meaning that we're separated from it, so that it's not something that we made a decision that's in the best interest of us, but it was in the best interest of the participant and it was open and free and so forth.
Okay. Got it. Now I'm assuming that that's sort of a reciprocal process. We too will also serve as a third party, neutral third party to someone else.
That's correct.
Okay, got it.
Right. Karma, it's Annalisa. Thank you for presenting this. Without getting too much into the weeds, I'm curious to know if you can describe the root cause or causes that might have caused the circumstances that led to the development of this policy.
So it's a policy required by law. So it has always been a policy required under WIOA since inception. Now, I think that the cause for the revision is because when Aaron, who's responsible for our policies and procedures, reviewed EDD's policy compared to our existing policy, there was a discrepancy. And so as a result, we needed to update our policy to ensure that we are meeting the requirements of the state. But it has always been a policy, and it's for good reason. I've been in workforce for quite some time, and I've had people challenge when we have asked them to leave a workforce program that their civil rights were violated because they were no longer eligible to receive access to federal funds. So it's important that this policy does exist.
Okay, so it sounds like eligibility is the question.
It's not eligibility, it's access. So for example, these are federal dollars. So it's not necessarily being eligible for the program, it's access to the program. So let me go back. Remember the code of conduct procedure. Because this is a federally funded program and I'm a US citizen, I should have access to the federally funded program. But if I violate the one-stop code of conduct, I will not have access to this federally funded program through Orange County. I can go to another county, another workforce area, but I cannot enter into Orange County's program because I reviewed their code of conduct. I agree that I would follow the code of conduct rules. The one-stop center may have asked me to leave and told me I cannot return because I violated the code of conduct. And so as a result, I could file a petition to say, hey, my civil rights were violated. We would go through this process to determine if that is in fact the case. If it is not the case, then the ban stands, meaning that you do not have access to Orange County. Does that, I hope this makes sense. I'm trying to get visualization of kind of what could possibly happen and why this is necessary. And it also could be eligibility. So maybe you go into the one-stop center and I tell you not eligible and you think that you're not eligible because of your nationality or your religion, right? Well, we'll go through this process to determine that that's not why you weren't allowed to have access to the services.
Okay, that's helpful, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, do we have a motion to approve the policy?
Mason moves.
Okay. Second.
Okay, I'll go ahead and go through the voting roll call. Terry Hollingsworth.
Approved.
John Luker.
Approved.
Annalisa Lukes.
Aye.
And Barbara Mason.
Approved.
With four yes votes, the action passes.
Great, thank you so much. All right, moving on, we have some information items, and in this section, we'll hear about some of the good work that our committees are doing, and starting off with the Business Services Committee. And let's see, who will be reporting out on that?
I can just say a couple of comments and then segue into Karma. So we met per the schedule, and there were a lot of activities and reports relative to business services, and we also had an open discussion towards the end of our last meeting, which resulted in some ideas that were bubbling up, which may or may not be discussed earlier by some other folks on the call. But I'll go ahead and segue to Karma for the job reports, job fair reports.
So during the meeting, we reviewed the job fairs. Most recently, we had a job fair for the 5th District. And I just want to make some highlights from that job fair. Can we scroll down a little bit, Adriana? So sure. There were 156 businesses registered, 867 3,767 postings, and then 867 participants. So that was a pretty successful job fair for us virtually. I'll go down to a little bit of historical knowledge. So historically speaking, in 2020, we hosted a virtual job fair, our first one, where we had 59 employers and there were 709 job seekers. this last one, we definitely doubled the employer size. We had 156 and 867 job seekers. And the unemployment rate at that time was 8.3%. So overall, I think that our job fairs have gotten better and more participation. And honestly, I think you can see by this historical information that the virtual job fairs have been a lot more successful than the face-to-face, because between 2015 and 2019, they were always face-to-face. And when I say 2015 to 2019, that could have been, that's a combination of multiple job fairs, meaning that there were multiple districts that hosted on-site job fairs, and that is the total of those job fairs. Mm-hmm. So we've exceeded just performance, historically speaking. Currently, we are in the process of hosting a D2 job fair, or putting together a D2, District 2 job fair that will be held on June 23rd. We just received approval on the flyers, so we will be sending those out today to employers and job seekers to get them registered. And that overall is kind of what I wanted to share. I know that we've sent this out to the board members. After each job fair, we kind of give you an update of who was there and kind of what happened. That's what I'd like to share with you. Do you have any questions or concerns about the job fair and our performance?
I think we also discussed, and this is great that we're seeing more employers and more job seekers through the virtual platform. But the true test of this is how many people are being hired. And that's the component that's critical that we have to capture. So virtual platforms, without a doubt, yes, create greater access to bring employers and job seekers together. But are they, actually hiring them? What do those numbers look like?
Yes. So that is the instruction that I received from the Business Service Committee to go back and survey the employers and the job seekers to see if anyone was hired from these events. And so my team has sent out surveys for the 5th district, because that was the first one this year. And we're waiting to get feedback on the hiring of that. Now, I do want to say that sometimes we don't get all the feedback we want in terms of the employers actually responding back saying, yes, I hired them, or no, but we'll certainly continue to try.
Okay. Can that be somehow included within the process of engaging employers, that they that an expectation or a requirement is that they report those individuals hired through the job fair?
We can ask that, of course, yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
Might it be possible to survey the job seekers as well to see?
We do.
What ended up happening?
We do both.
I got the job, okay.
Yeah, we do both. So that's my update for the job fairs. Are there any other questions or concerns?
Here's some of the data for the from the job seekers.
Yeah, they have a copy of this. I've given them a copy of this report prior to the meetings. This isn't what she's asking for. She's looking for a report on whether or not they got a job. Mm-hmm. So this is only the next day after the job fair. We just ask for people to complete surveys about the actual job fair, if they were satisfied or dissatisfied with the platform and the employers. So this is what that is. This is not the follow-up to see if you actually got a job.
Do you anticipate that other districts besides D2 will be requesting virtual job fairs?
So far, we've done one for D5, we've now done one for D4, and now we're doing D2. So I think in the end, we'll do one for each district. The challenge, to be honest with you, we really should be doing it for the entire county, and hopefully the districts will learn to get together to do them, because they're bigger if they got together to do them. When we focus on districts, I think it kind of limits us a little bit. And we're competing with Anaheim. So right now, Anaheim is doing a really big job fair. They're known for hosting really large job fairs once a year. Their job fair will be on June 9th. So I do feel like we may be over-exhausting employers, where I'm reaching out to the employers and asking them to participate in my job fair. Anaheim's doing the same thing. We're around the same time. So I say that all to say that we may be over, over connecting.
Yeah, it could be saturated. Diluting the message, right? Is there
anything, may have saturated the market.
Yeah, is there anything that this body can do to help either make a recommendation or analyze the efficacy of having multiple job fairs versus focused countywide job fairs?
Probably, but I think for us, maybe it's letting this year play out so we can see it, and then going back and say, hey, we've evaluated these job fairs and what's happening. I think right now they're not going to be able to see that having these five job fairs is not as impactful as having quarterly big giant job fairs. But I think once we get through all five of them and get the reports from all five of them, then perhaps maybe it's a different message. Now, what I did share with each district that contacted me is that job fairs typically, the studies say that the best time to have job fairs are in certain months. And so I shared with them that June is not usually a favorable month for a job fair because it's summer. And so maybe this June job fair will see a decline. Maybe not. But if they maybe see that decline and if they continue to ask them over the summer, maybe that'll help them see that perhaps we should probably follow what the studies say and the months that we should be hosting them in because we may be oversaturating.
All right, any questions regarding the job fair report?
Just one last comment, which is that it's probably premature at this point, but as we start going back to life, and this is something we can discuss at the next business services committee, what would the plan be? What would that look like in 2022? Okay, so we can just park that and not anything that we have to discuss at this moment, I don't think.
Great. Then why don't we go ahead and move forward to the youth committee report.
Hello, everyone. This is John. We had a great weeks ago. Obviously, we went through some of these action items that we just approved. A lot of our time was spent kind of reviewing the performance of our contractor and, you know, obviously going through some of the concerns of essentially the number of youth going through the program is much slower than anticipated. Obviously, that's a lot of that has to do with COVID and sites being shut down and the youth being disproportionately affected by, you know, jobs and different things being closed down. So in the end, we're obviously going to monitor this. The contractor was on the call and had a number of youth speak. And things are starting to pick up now that things are opening back up. And so really at this point, all we're going to be doing is monitoring this. We did ask for some benchmarking data from other WIBs across the area to kind of see how other youth providers are doing. Anecdotally, they said that they're experiencing, or at least from what we had heard, they're experiencing similar types of issues. So just want to make sure that we're doing everything that we possibly can do to support our youth during this time. And so hopefully as things start picking up in the economy, we'll start seeing the youth start utilizing these services and these funds that are that are available to them. Anything else you want to mention, Karma?
No, I think you did a great job. Oh, John, I don't know if we want to talk about that. We reviewed the pending contracts that are scheduled to go in front of the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, we did go ahead and approve at the committee level the renewal of those contracts with the same providers. They were reduced based upon the non-use of a lot of the funds this year. So the contracts were reduced with the caveat that if the funds are being expended and we're meeting all of our numbers, then the amounts could be increased proportionately. But right now the contracts were going to be at least go in front of the Board of Supervisors at a smaller amount.
Any Any questions for John regarding the youth report? If not, thank you so much, John, that report. All right, moving on to our next report. Let's see, is it that covered all of B, right, Karma?
That's
all right. Okay, so we're moving on now to the one-stop oversight committee. Do we have a report on that?
Barbara?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, we're ready for the one-stop oversight committee report.
So we reviewed the document that we just approved, the appeal process, the process for people to raise a complaint. We reviewed that. And we also looked at in detail the performance of our contractors. And there is a pattern there. There is a theme. Many are way behind schedule. And it's what we've talked about before. Areas have been closed. This year has been a real challenge. Areas have been closed and people have not been going in. So because of that, many of the providers appear to be off schedule. And so Karma's team provided some background on each one and sort of where we are expecting actually to be getting money back as this year ends in June and we start the new calendar year in July. All of the money will not be spent by several of the contractors and the money will be returned. And so we discussed that and looked at if that is sort of chalk that up to COVID and things being shut down, or is there a problem with contractor management? And Karma, I defer to you to provide some more detail there, but the sense I got was this year was quite unique and we're expecting to get back on track as things open back up.
That is correct. I don't have any other updates. I think Barbara did a great job of sharing what we reviewed and where we are with the service providers and the fact that we did review the new contracts that will be going in front of the Board of Supervisors on May 27th.
Yes, great point, that as well. Yeah, and I will say, if it wasn't but for COVID, we would be concerned with what we saw. But when you look at the facts and you look at the period of time that the one-stops have been closed, you can start to understand what's happening. But we certainly hope that coming out of this, those numbers are significantly better.
Great, thank you, Barbara. Any questions regarding the oversight committee's report?
Yeah, I have a question regarding funding. So with funds having to be returned because of COVID-19 related issues, do you anticipate that there would be an impact to the budget of this board and or how much funding we might get from these sources moving forward? What's the implication on the budget if there is any?
That's a good question. In a normal environment, we would be reduced. But given the fact that the governor has about $75 billion in the budget for responses as a response to COVID, as well as the economic decline for California, it's hard to say. So in a normal environment, if we weren't in a recession and we didn't have a pandemic, we would be getting cut because the way the state does is they calculate your performance and your spending and determine your next allotment of money. But given the fact that we are in those conditions, but so much money is being poured down from the federal and the state level, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think there might be some questions about where we are. In fact, I have an email from EDD where they want me to explain why our spending isn't where it's supposed to be. And so I will be sending an email back to try to explain our position. But I honestly don't know what they're going to do given all this money being poured in from the federal and state level versus our ability to impact it. Maybe it's probably a plan. Maybe they're going to want me to have a plan for spending moving forward. And in that, I'll have a conversation with this board about diversifying, finding opportunities for us to provide money to more service providers rather than the ones that we currently have. and or provide more services in-house.
Any other questions regarding the One-Stop Oversight Committee? If not, we'll move on the agenda to discussion items. Is there anything in particular that, Carmen, you'd like to discuss?
Mm-hmm. I have two items. Adrienne, if I can share my screen, please.
Okay.
The first item I'd like to discuss is just the timeline for our workforce board disabled participant screening. Adrienne, it says that you've disabled participant screen sharing. So can you enable it or either make me a host so that I can share my screen?
Okay. I've changed your status, see if that helps.
Okay, can you all see my screen?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, so there is a timeline for specific, I'll make it a little bit bigger, for specific state and regional local workforce activities. And so what I wanna do is kind of go over with you some things that I have to accomplish this program year and next program year, because a couple of the items I may need the board support. So as you can see for program year 2021, we had the local plan modification and the regional plan, which Annette has worked with us to complete. So we have that established, or not established, but we have it completed. And we have it going in front of the Board of Supervisors for approval, and then we'll submit that to the state. So we'll have that in by the deadline. The next two items is the local area subsequent designation and local board recertification. These are two items that I'm going to have to bring to the Orange County Workforce Development Board, so you, for approval and signature, but then I'm also gonna have to take it to the Board of Supervisors. What these two documents are basically outlining that we have appropriate number of members on our board in the appropriate position. And right now we are down three board members. So I've met with two individuals and made recommendations to the Board of Supervisors to consider those people to replace two of the board members that recently left. And then I asked the Board of Supervisors to identify a third member. So the positions we have available is one in education, and then we have two open positions in business. And as you may recall, under WIOA, the board must have over 50% business and then the other categories. And so as of right now, I'm waiting for the Orange County Board of Supervisors to appoint the two people we recommended, or I recommended on our behalf, which one of them was Mike Daniel from the Orange County Small Business Development Center, because I think that would be a great support to this board. The second one was, I can't think of her name right now, I apologize. She's with the Orange County Department of Education. And the reason why I asked for her is because we don't have any K-12 education representation on this board. And because Orange County has so many school districts, it just made sense to pick someone at the county level versus at the lower, not I won't say lower, but at the school district level. And then the last one is open because I didn't have anyone to appoint for business. So I left it to supervisors if they had someone in mind, or if you or anyone on this board has somebody in mind to send up to the Board of Supervisors. Given that we are down three members, I can't submit our applications for the subsequent designation or the local board recertification until we have a full board. So we're at a standstill. So it's not as if we haven't done activities to try to meet the requirements. We actually have submitted a plan to the state of the positions that we plan to try to fill. And I've also asked the state for an extension, but we're at the mercy of the Orange County Board of Supervisors. And so, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was just wanting to, and the Board of Supervisors understands the urgency behind them, taking action on this.
I've expressed to my manager, who's communicating directly with the board, the sense of urgency. I've included her in the emails to the state where the state gave me an extension, but said it's due. So I have communicated to leadership that this is necessary and urgent.
And the consequences of us not meeting,
not being able to get any funding.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, have you put that in writing to them?
Yes, to my supervisor, yes, I have. Okay. And it says it in the documents. So the documents say that in order for a local board to get money, I still think that the board of supervisors don't understand how big having this board and compliance is to them. And maybe that's part of the problem, that the board of supervisors is not mandated by law. It's this workforce development board that's mandated by law.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that the board, like from a resolution standpoint or a formal declaration to the board of supervisors can do to notify them, or to, I don't know, just officially state that we have serious concerns about this, that it's not happening, and the ramifications.
Yeah, as board members, you absolutely can, because you are the advisory to the board of supervisors. You absolutely can.
And what's the best way to do that, Karma?
Well, I guess my first question is, have you all developed relationships with the supervisors?
Well, I know we can reach out to the supervisors ourselves, but I'm just wondering if as a body, is there a way to formally communicate to the board of supervisors, as a body, through any kind of resolution, or is it just an email, or is it just, I don't know.
Yes. So here's my challenge. Because I'm technically a county employee, I don't have the ability to directly go to them. But because you are the advisory board to them under this law, you do. So if you, as the chair and the vice chair and the committee members, draft an email, contact the supervisors and inform them that this is an issue, yes, you could do that. But I'm in a situation where I'm, because of my dual capacities, I feel limited to being able to do that, but you absolutely can, and that is your right to do that. That is the role you should play, is notifying them when there's a problem and things aren't moving.
So specifically, again, just what if I were to write an email, because I'm appointed by Andrew Dove, what would you want me to say specifically in an email to him or call?
Think is maybe checking on the status of the board appointment and notifying him that our local area subsequent designation has not been submitted to the state, and that the local board recertification hasn't been submitted to the state. I'd like to, before you do that, let me circle back with my manager and say, hey, my board has expressed concerns during the executive committee that this has not been done. They'd like an update. And then if you're not satisfied with the update, your next step is to contact the supervisors.
Yeah. And Karma, it might be helpful to us, because it sounds like that's where it's going, is that there's going to be, once you checked in with your boss, that we may need to go on record and submit our concerns in a more formal written format. It would be helpful if you provided us with the actual language. And then we can, add our name to it.
Okay.
So that would be helpful.
Okay.
Is everyone in agreement with that?
Yeah, I second that. Yeah,
okay.
Points.
Right. Yes, that's reasonable.
So then I'm clear. Let me make sure I understand the instruction. So what I think I hear you say is, can I circle back with my supervisor and find out what the status is, and let her know that the intention is for this board, if they're not satisfied with where this is going based off of concerns, they'd like to send a communication to the board of supervisors that I will be drafting.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. All right. So if there are no more questions about that, let me move to the next item.
Okay.
Okay. The next item on this list you'll see is the AJCC operator selection. Well, we've already done that. So last year we did an RFP for the one-stop operator. So we are a little off schedule, but we're okay. So this one does not have to be submitted to the state this year. We have 4 years. So with us doing it during the 1920 year, we won't have to do it again until the 23-24 year. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The next item on the list is the career service provider selection RFP is due. Well, we're off balance on that one too. So it's due, this technically due this year by the state, but because of how Orange County did it, I'm not due until next year. So starting July, I need to start writing this. And what this is the WIOA Title I Career Service Provider. So this is the MCS of our services. So I need to do a new RFP for that, which my staff will be working on, and hopefully we'll have a draft submitted by the August board member to the one-stop committee to look at our draft, or to work on the draft RFP. Now, the only issue is that these meetings are public, and I don't know if you want potential service providers to be to hear or be a part of or listen into what we're writing into RFPs. That's to you guys. I mean, it is public information. We're not going to deviate much from WIOA, but I do want this board's input.
How has this been handled in the past?
I don't think the board was ever a part of it. John can and Barbara, can you tell me if you guys ever got any say so in the RFPs?
No.
I don't think so, no.
I think there was a pretty like a firewall. We were not involved in that.
See, I'd like for you to be involved at least the one-stop committee to talk about what they can see.
So the question on hand is, do we think it's appropriate to have potential vendor partners who might apply for the RFP to be part of the open meetings to discuss the development of the RFP? Is that right?
That's right.
Well, that seems like a conflict of interest in a way.
Yeah.
So I guess you wouldn't open up. So I guess my thing is we wouldn't.
But if they're attending as the public, I guess that's fine. It's open to the public. But if they're on the board or the committee and they're providing votes or finding comments, then that would be concerning, I think.
Right. And I don't believe there are current board members that have any interest in WIOA Title I Career Services.
Yeah, I personally don't have any issues with it. I think the more involved the providers are in the development of the RFP, they actually understand what we're looking for and can write their RFP or their responses to the RFP in a more strategic way that we are actually looking for versus them trying to guess what potentially a sentence means or this means, or I don't personally have any issues with it.
So John, my challenge is that when I read some of the proposals submitted by the service providers and what we actually get, people write really great proposals, but then when you get the actual product, it's not quite what you asked for, meaning that you could have sat in the RFP bidders conference, you could have read the RFP in advance, you know how to write it to say, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, but then the product you actually get at the end. I think for me, I'd love to present to you our draft of the RFP, like just and ask you, okay, what other additional items would you like to add to this? Or maybe even not even a draft, maybe have the one-stop committee and say, as we develop this RFP, here's what the law says it needs to cover. What additional items would you like to include for checks and balances? Maybe it's that kind of conversation at the one-stop committee meeting. I wouldn't take it to the full board. I would just leave it at the committee level. So that way the committee has chimed in or added input into the RFP.
Without the potential providers listening in to the making of the RFP.
They'd listen in, they'd hear it. So me and my staff is always putting the WIOA law in there, right? They should know the WIOA law, but then maybe they hear what the board wants to see. And so they know my board is going to pay attention to these things. And I don't know what you would want to add. So if I give you the provisions of WIOA and says WIOA says X, Y, and Z must be a part of the program design, maybe the one-stop committee says, well, Karma, I want to make sure that there's more training and more customized training for resume writing or interview techniques. That's what I think will probably come out of those conversations, or more more evidence of one-on-one time with service providers. I don't know, but I'd like to just kind of get the input of this board, because I don't think the committee had ever put in what they'd like to see in these RFPs. And so what you got was a product that you had no input in and in regards to.
So Karma, you mentioned something earlier, which is as to the quality of performance relative to the proposal. And that's a big deal. And I think it's something that we sort of alluded to a few board meetings ago, which is how do we, if at all, tie contract terms so that there are milestones and connection to whether a provider is able to draw down funds. So I know for one, that would be something I would love to see in any future RFPs, and therefore maybe sample contracts that get included in any request for proposals that go out to the public and to the bidders, is to really be clear that there is a connection between performance and being able to retrieve funds. And however that gets written is something I'll rely on you upon, but I'll just say that I would love to see something that connects performance to being able to get paid.
That's exactly what I would like.
I completely second that. And also look at past performance when they're bidding on the work. I feel like over the years when I've seen this, we've known about problems with some bidders. And yet if that isn't a criteria in the RFP evaluation process, then it doesn't get counted in.
So it sounds, Karma, like what you're proposing might be the better way to go, starting off with the law as the basis and then allowing the oversight committee to weigh in, is that the right committee that would do that?
The one-stop committee.
The one-stop committee, I'm sorry. To go in and put additional, details or requirements within the RFP. To have an opportunity to weigh in on that. So that, from what I'm hearing, that seems like that might be the better way to go in this case. But I'm still not clear on then, but still the public, the potential providers would have the opportunity to hear and you know, the discussion that takes place with the forming of the RFP. The difference is, we'll have an opportunity to add our additional, the one-stop committee will have the opportunity to add additional requirements that they will have access to in terms of the discussion.
That's correct. Now, what I can do just to make sure that we're okay is I can reach out to EDD and just ask, is this appropriate? Is this allowable and is it appropriate? And if they say, yes, you could, then I think that we're okay to go forward. If they say, no, Karma, we kind of got some concerns, but the competitiveness of the proposals, then I will not. But our meetings are all public. So my worry would be someone saying, well, this provider sat in the meeting, listened, and they got to hear it and they got to know what they wanted. But because they're recorded, because they're public, anybody can go back and listen to them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'll ask EDD so that way we have, just so I don't get us in trouble, but I personally would like that. I think that would have more, for me, more input from the board helps me when we start talking about performance in the future, because you were a part of it, you know what you wanted, I knew what you were looking for, and we were able to get that in that that RFP and hold people accountable to it.
Right.
Okay. I like that. I just want to highlight again Barbara's point about asking a question about past performance and eliciting information as to the quality of prior work. And having that be a question that someone has to respond to rather than us catching it on the back end in the middle of the contract.
I agree. And so perhaps maybe we ask them for past performance reports. But mm-hmm. And that's something that I would love this committee to say so that I write it in there. So that once that committee actually says, hey, Karma, this is what we want in this RFP. The same thing would happen for the business service committee if we decided to outsource any of that. And the youth committee, the same process. If this is the direction we go, that's the same process I'd like to make for all of our RFPs moving forward with these big contracts or sub-recipient contracts. Not necessarily with the little ones, but with the big ones, where it's performance-driven, we owe a performance-driven contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, I'm gonna go back to this list so we can get through this. So then the next item under the 2021 program year is the MOU and infrastructure costs. I am going to be late on this and I'm just gonna be transparent because I've been trying to get the South County location, the county to enter into that lease agreement. so that I didn't have to do it twice. Right now, EDD approved the South County location at Cabot, Crown Cabot. So the location has been identified. EDD likes it. We're held up from seismic information, meaning that we have to make sure that it meets EDD seismic requirements before we can enter into a lease agreement. So that is the holdup of that location. But once I get that location, then I'll update the MOU and infrastructure agreement, include all of the sites, and have all the partners sign it. So this one, I do want to bring to your attention that I will likely not have this turned in on time.
Are there any consequences to that?
Being out of compliance, but again, I'd ask the state for an extension. The consequence would be being out of compliance.
Okay.
But I will ask the state for an extension to explain to them why it is not on time. And keep in mind that the state is EDD is currently working with me on Garden Grove and the South County location. So it is not as if they don't know. So they know we're working out lease structure and so forth for both locations.
Okay, but no penalties or fines?
I don't think so, especially because they're involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We just might get a letter saying we're currently out of compliance.
Okay.
All right, so the next category of things that we have to work on in 2021. So the state plan modification, that's not us, that's EDD. But then we've got the MOU of the comprehensive and affiliates. The infrastructure agreement needs to be updated. Then the next thing on this list is the AJC certification of the comprehensive and affiliates. So it is my understanding the last time we were required to go out and certify the Hallmark of Excellence, that the board elected a ad hoc committee to do that. And I believe Barbara Mason may have led that or participated in it. So what I'd like to propose is that this board nominates an ad hoc committee to do the same thing again, to complete the certification process for our comprehensive and affiliate sites during the program 21-22 year. So that year starts July 1 of 2020 and ends on June 31st of 2022.
I didn't lead a committee. I helped when there was a doing some audits or observations, spent a day at each of the one stops, you know, compiling checklists and that sort of thing. But I think it might have been somebody else that might have led a committee here.
Oh, God. Was it another board member that led it for the certification of the one stop?
It may have been.
Okay.
I was more where I spent a day with the team at each of the one stops, and we did sort of an audit of processes.
Okay. So this is going to be due next year. And so what I'd like to do is have this board nominate an ad hoc committee that nominate a member to lead the ad hoc committee, and the committee maybe have one or two other board members and then sit staff or the board staff, so that we can go out and review all the locations and certify them.
But and Carmen, when do you need this member to lead this group?
I think if you're ready to take action on it at the next board meeting and name somebody, you can do it then, or we can wait till the August meeting.
Okay. All right. You may need to remind us.
Okay. All right. Would you prefer to wait to the August meeting and take action on it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then the next item on our timeline that'll be due is performance negotiation. So I negotiated performance in 1920. I negotiate that with the state every 2 years. This performance is the same performance that we are held accountable to the local workforce board for all of our programs, and we pass it down to our service provider. So I just want to notify you that I'm going to be negotiating with the state sometime next year. And that negotiation, like I said, impacts our contract, but then it impacts our local area. And just so you know, I typically, whatever our negotiated performance number is, I usually add 10% onto it and pass it down to the service provider, so that way we meet the goal. So for example, if the state negotiated 70%, I make it 80% to our service providers. Any questions or concerns about performance negotiation? and I typically share it with the board. If you don't have a copy of the last one, I can forward to you the email that I sent to the board to notify you where we landed on the performance negotiation.
That might be helpful to get another copy of that.
Okay.
Are you anticipating any concerns?
No, actually, so here's what happened. At the last negotiation, I caught out the fact that we were in the middle of the pandemic and that our performance was too high. Mm-hmm. And the state said, yeah, Carmen, you're right, we understand. Mm-hmm. But EDD or DOL is sticking us to this performance. There'll likely be a curve at the end when they review it all. There's probably going to be a curve. So I think that what's going to happen is our performance is going to go down in terms of what they're going to negotiate with me as our performance for the next 2 years will likely decrease.
Okay.
All right, so I'll send that to you. All right, and that's it for the updates for the calendar. I just want to make sure that you are aware of the calendar and assignments that had to be done for us as a local workforce board or a local workforce area. Are there any other questions or concerns before I move on?
This is really helpful, Karma. It helps give an overview of what it is that we need to accomplish in order to make sure that funds are secured and we're in compliance. And I'm curious to know, just so that we can provide support to the team, might it make sense to do a review of this quarterly or perhaps beginning, middle, end of the fiscal year?
We could, we certainly can.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that'll be helpful.
Okay. And so quarterly, so each board meeting would look at this or would you prefer just, because that means each board meeting we'd look at this chart, or would you prefer to maybe once a year or twice a year get this chart?
I would be good with twice a year, provided that, you know, we get a chance to take a look at potential corrective action or whatever else we might need to prepare for. Probably at least a quarter before the end of the fiscal year.
So what I'll do is every year at the beginning of the year, we'll look at this, the projects that we have to complete for the year. So that means in July, I'll review this. And so then, well, the first meeting of the year, we'll review this. And then the third quarter meeting, we'll review this.
What do you all think?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's fine. Twice a year.
Or three.
Okay.
Yes.
Three.
Okay. All right, so I am going to stop sharing this document and then move over to the next discussion item. So the next discussion item I want to bring to your attention is an interesting one. So you may recall probably was almost 2 years ago that I brought this to the board that there were a lot of participants that had been in the program for years, meaning that our service providers may have enrolled them in 2000, and these are adults and dislocated workers, so let me preference it. This is who we're talking about. They would enroll them in WIOA probably back in 2000, and as of 2019, they were still enrolled in our program. And so what I decided to do is if a participant had not been in the one-stop program over 10 months and we've not engaged with them, to remove them from our program. So basically send them a letter saying our records indicate that you have not been active in over several months. We are going to exit you from the program if you do not contact us, but if you want to stay in the program, please contact us so that we keep you in the WIOA program. The intent of doing that is that number one, when we do it, it negatively impacts our performance. So once you enroll someone in WIOA, they are automatically in our performance number. So remember under WIOA, there's like those several categories of performance, but each person we enroll is a part of the overall performance calculation. And so when you exit somebody, it negatively impacts you. That means that in all those performance categories, you now have a negative ding towards that performance. So I decided to do it then because we were in the middle with the beginning of COVID. I knew that we were gonna get negative performance either way. So if you hadn't talked to them, it was probably gonna ding. If you were talking to them and you weren't progressing, it didn't make any sense. So we made a decision without letters, and we removed quite a few people from the one-stop system. I thought by doing that, we'd have a fresh look forward with a fresh perspective actively engaging with participants and even having problems.
I'm sorry, Barbara, I think we're getting some feedback from your line.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Okay. So recently, MCS reached out to us and asked us to remove people again. Now, I have personal opinions about it, but I wanted to bring this to the board's attention so that we can discuss it because I think it's a problem. And so the email that they sent to us is that there's a list of participants who have not received training service and are just about the 10-month mark and are due to be exited. What that means to me is that you've not engaged with them, you've not provided them a service, you've enrolled them, and they've been sitting in our program for 10 months. And so MCS wants us to exit them. Now, the issue with us exiting them is it's an immediate negative ding on us, and that we accept the fact that you, MCS, as my service provider, haven't engaged with these participants for quite some time. So let me open up this spreadsheet so you can see how many. So for the North County, there are about 27 participants that they want to exit from the program. Now, that's on the North County. And on the South County, there are an additional 25 participants that they want to exit to the program. So that's about 51 people we're exiting from the program. Now remember, we just looked at their performance and they already don't have the contracted amount of people that they're supposed to serve. Are you able to see my screen? I'm not sure if it's still showing.
It's blank right now.
So Irma, when you say exit the program, it doesn't mean complete the program, it means you're removing them, is that right?
I'm deleting them from the program and I'm going to take the negative impact on my performance. So the law says the only way a participant can exit the program and it not count against us is if they are incarcerated or if they die, or if they're medically in a situation where they medically cannot be a part of the program. Those are the three exceptions for exiting somebody from the program and not impacting performance. But if you just exit them because you're not talking to them, you're still going to be dinged. You're going to be dinged. Does that make sense, Barbara? I just want to make sure you're...
It does, yes.
So I say that all to say that this service provider has not, these people, these 51 people that they're asking to release, have not been engaged in the program for over 10 months. Now, we give them a contract to provide case management. And the way it's supposed to work is that no less than once a month should you be reaching out to this participant and trying to bring them in for services or support them in their career goal. That means that at least 51 people in this program, they haven't done that at all with them. Whether it's the participant's fault or the service provider's fault, I don't know, but they haven't. The other part of WIOA is that not everybody should be enrolled in WIOA. So while the service providers have this contract to provide services to people, not everybody's a good fit. So what normal environment, what should happen is that I meet with the participant, I explain to them what the program design is, and that they have to be committed to being a part of this before I enroll them. And I've got to get their buy-in that, yes, Karma, I do want a job. I need you to help me because I'm not able to do this on my own, or whatever reason is behind that person enrolling. But we have a mutual agreement that this is a joint process. And so I should be connecting with you and helping you with your plan and keeping up with you along the way so that you make it to the finish line. You should see value and progress in what I'm providing you because you enrolled in my program. And then I should see connection with you and then progress with you because you also agreed to be a part of this program. Well, with 51 people exiting, I don't think that's what's happening.
So Karma, I'm curious to know whether we have a sense or have done a root cause analysis as to why they didn't connect with the participants. What's going on?
Yeah. So I've got some things that are happening that are raising flags to me in terms of like some data things that are happening. We're sending out corrective action letters day to day with the service providers. So for example, we sent out a survey to participants. Every time a participant says that they entered into the One Stop or they received a service, we send a survey to them and say, how did it go? I'm getting letters back from people saying, what are you talking about? I haven't been here in a year. And so what I do is send a letter to MCS and say, well, MCS, how is this possible? This person says they haven't been there in over a year, but yet they're in this survey saying that you gave them services on this day, what happened? Or it could be a situation where a participant calls me and says, yeah, I went to the center, but nothing's happening. So then I sent a corrective action letter to MCS and say, well, this person says they went into the center and it's been over 3 weeks and they're not enrolled. What's happening? So my team and I are consistently sending corrective action letters to the service provider and documenting that these things are happening. So it is not as if I don't see it. But I think my issue is right now, and why I'm talking to you, is how do you want to handle this request? So you have two options. You can approve this request and go ahead and delete the people from the system. Or we can say, no, MCS, I'm not approving this request. You've got a contract to provide services. Please provide services to this participant. If they soft exit, please provide a corrective action of why all these people soft exit the system. Now, what I can show you is that they've given notes on all of these participants as to why. Let me pull up.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know is, have they documented their efforts to reach out to these individuals?
So I don't know that they document efforts, but they put notes for each person as to what's happening. So they list the person, they list the active dates or the last date of activity in the system and their enrollment date. And then it says, are you able to see my screen? I'm sorry.
Yes.
And then there's a client service status, and it says client is not engaged. Client enrolled for COVID grant and has only been interested in basic services. Client is still pending COVID grant receipts. The next one, client not engaged, same thing. So then this one says client not engaged. Same, it's the same message for those first three. Then it gets down to the fourth one. Client is actively engaged. Client is enrolled for COVID grant, individualized client. Was recently approved for ITA services, however, soon as starting date is October 2021. I don't know why you remove that person if you're saying they're actively engaged, but
right.
Okay. I'm curious to know too, when you have, and thank you for sending corrective letters to the provider, what, if any, is their general response, or is there a trend as to what they're saying is the issue? I see that it's saying client does not engage. What does that really mean? And why would, how could we get a client into the system that turns out to be disengaged? Is there something in the intake or pre-qualification process that needs to be refined? I'm not trying to get into the weeds, I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, I think it may be many things. So my hunch is that you're not explaining this person what this program is. You can't be. If you enroll, if I come into the One Stop Center and I'm not actively engaged, it's probably because I don't either A, understand what I enrolled in, or B, don't see value in it. That's what I think happens. That if I don't see value and I don't believe you're going to help me find a job, or that you have the ability to get me to the finish line, then no, I'm not going to be engaged. But if I'm enrolled and I see that you're helping with my resume and that you're giving me things that I can actually use and connecting me with employers, and then yeah, I'm going to stay engaged with you because I believe you're able to help me get there.
Right.
My initial thoughts on this is I'm concerned with just removing all of these individuals without more investigation on why these clients have not engaged. I know that you said you sent a survey to some of these individuals, but I'm just wondering, would it be helpful? And I know it might require more of your staff to actually call these individuals to find out.
I'd be happy to do that. In fact, that's okay. Great advice. So what I want to do is I don't want to exit them because no. Now I'll tell you, the system will soft exit them, meaning that let's say that I enroll in the program and for 90 days there's been no activity, the system automatically exits you from the program. Well, here's my issue also with what they're saying right here. So if I see a note that you've been enrolled in this program for 10 months, you've not been actively engaged, that means that you've been putting in codes and CalJobs to keep that person enrolled for at least 10 months. But then my question is why? Why are you putting something in CalJobs and then turn around and tell Karma, hey Karma, I haven't been able to engage with them for 10 months. That's more than 90 days. Because remember, the way CalJobs is set up, after 90 days of no activity, you automatically exit it. That means the service provider has been putting activities in there to hold these clients. And now you're saying, oh, Karma, they haven't been a part of this. Let's exit them.
Yeah, that's
a concern. Mm-hmm.
If it, because of the COVID situation and things are so odd, I would feel like I agree, you need to do a little more digging on why. And I think we would have to give these people adequate notice that they're being removed.
I usually do. So they're asking me to send them a letter saying either you participate or I'm removing you.
Well, at some point that might be reasonable, but how much notice, I guess, would you give?
I don't think we should do it because I think there's a couple of other issues with what's happening here. So there's the issue of how did this person stay in here for 10 months if you're saying they haven't been actively engaged? Like, how is it they made it to 10 months? Because the system would have automatically exited them. That means that you purposely kept noting the system to keep them in there for performance so that when I do
so
my-
there's gaps.
I'm sorry?
Has that question been asked directly of the provider?
Nope, I just wanted to talk to you guys before I did it. I wanted to bring this to your attention and have a discussion about this before I did anything else with this provider so that you guys are aware of a challenge that I currently have. And
sure. Well, I, for one, don't believe that it's time to exit 51 people at this time, given that there seems to be root cause issues that we still need to really clarify and take a look at, not just for this particular contract, but perhaps, I don't know if this provider is engaged in other programs, but looking at it from a perspective is broader, what is going on? So I would be curious to know before we exit anybody and then have that end up hurting the board.
So what I think I hear you say is you'd like for me to reach out to each one of these participants and find out what their experience has been like, whether it's a survey or a phone call, find out with each one of these participants, what are they experiencing and what can I change? Then I think the next step I think I hear you say is notify the service provider of the feedback from this, but also I think still a corrective action plan because the question still is, how is it that it lasted 10 months in this program with no, without self-exiting if they have not been engaged? That's a big question.
I'm just looking at the comment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so MCS did not request to exit these clients. We were asked to provide a list of individuals who at their 10 month, who were at their 10 month.
Mark, who've not exited, yeah. Let me go back to the email.
Okay.
Hold on.
All right.
Let me stop sharing. Okay, let me go back into the email.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me back to the message. And then share. Here's the email. Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay.
And are due to be exited.
So it says actual list of participants who are not receiving training services and are just about to hit the 10 month mark and are due to be exited. If MCS suggested on their notes that the participant has minimally active, I cross-referenced the CalJobs information found. I made a note on the last column, let's discuss during a one-on-one meeting today. But then here's the message from them. Okay.
Right. So you're referring to the message under
The message in the conversation. So Zitlalik had a conversation with MCS, and then she brought it to my attention and had a meeting with me and shared all of this with me. So she and I had a one-on-one where we discussed what is the ask. And so in that one-on-one is where she presented that they wanted to basically exit these participants. And so my response to her is, I'm not making a decision. I'm bringing this to the board for a conversation.
So just on this chat comment that came in, is there now questions regarding the true intent of what's being requested?
Well, that's Gloria Gatton who's putting that in there. So that's, I just had a conversation with Gloria. That's the service provider chatting in here.
Okay, I see.
So I haven't had a conversation with the service provider. I've had a conversation with Zitlalik about this situation, and I explained to Zitlalik, I will not be making a decision. I will be presenting all of this to the board. So if this is what MCS is saying, then MCS is saying that, no, I don't want to exit them. They're hitting the 10-month mark.
Okay. All right.
So then to clarify, it sounds like there's more conversation that needs to be done between the team and the provider. However, if we go back to the original question, if the question is, do we exit the 51, I would be inclined to say no, not at this time.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree as well.
I still will reach out. Adriana, you're on mute. I will still reach out to the participants, each one of them, find out what their experience has been like.
Okay. Gloria does have her hand up if you want me to allow her to talk.
Terry, do you want
to? Sure. Yes.
Okay, Gloria, I believe we should be able to hear you if you're unmuted on your end.
Okay, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Can you all hear me?
Good morning. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to
clarify. Good morning.
We were asked to provide a list of anyone that is at their 10-month time limit. So our contract specifically says that they didn't want us to carry anybody over 10 months that were not actively enrolled, that were not active in our program. So we were told anyone in training, anyone that's still active, provide a list of those people that are in that 10-month period. So that's exactly what we did. We are not asking to exit these people. Now, a lot of the people that first came in, what I will share, only came in for COVID. So that's what's affected our performance. And I made this very clear from the very beginning when the COVID monies were coming in. I said, people are coming in just asking for COVID money. They didn't want services. They did not want to participate in basic career services. We were told, serve the community, give them their money, and just get, but they have to be enrolled. So I was very concerned from the very beginning that, hey, this is going to affect our performance because all these people are just coming in for their dollars. We had thousands of people lined up outside when this first came out. And the first concern I had was, hey, what's going to happen? We have, retired people, 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds outside waiting to get their money. So again, we were just abiding by the rules that our contract says anyone in the 10-month period, we need to let them know what's going on with those people. So that's the list that we provided. If they were not in training or they're not actively, then we had to provide a list of what was going on with those people. That's basically what we did. We're not asking to exit these people.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you for sharing that, Gloria.
Thank you, Terry.
So these individuals that, as you say, primarily showed up just for the COVID money, so have any of them taken opportunity of the other services, the WIOA services offered through the One Stop?
Yes, they have. There's quite a few that have.
Okay.
That are actively job searching. We've helped them out with resumes. We've helped them out with training funds. So we do have quite a few that are active. There's a handful that are not, and that's because that's all they came in for was just to collect the COVID money.
So it sounds like we still should move forward with checking in with those individuals to find out a little bit more about their own, unique situation.
Yes.
In terms of those who have and have not engaged with WIOA. I would probably still, move forward with what the executive committee has recommended in terms of more research of these individuals that MCS provided on the list.
Yes, correct. And let me just make one more comment. we report on a weekly basis of activities that are happening. Now, if clients are collecting these surveys, after I do talk to a few of the clients that, are referred over to me, what's happening is that, yes, they may not be coming into the center, but we are offering virtual services to them. Mm-hmm. So we are required by county to enter them into CalJobs, because that's the way we have to, I guess, prove that we are providing a service. So they do pop up on CalJobs as a virtual service for, it could be career counseling, it could be some type of workshop. We enter them. So I think when the clients are receiving their survey, I don't think they quite understand the questions that are being asked. I know there was a couple of people that had a couple of complaints and I addressed those. And it looks like it sometimes, it may be our counselors, but a lot of times it's the front desk also. So I think the survey questions, I'm not sure what the survey questions are asked, are given to the clients, but I think after I talk to them, they're like, oh, no, we didn't have a problem with you guys. So I'm not sure what type of surveys are being distributed to the clients.
Okay. Thank you, Gloria. Any questions for Gloria?
Just out of curiosity here. Thank you so much for sharing that, Gloria. So for the folks who are coming in and they really just are interested in COVID money, is there a way, or could there have been a way to count them towards a different program so that it doesn't hurt this particular program? It's all lumped together?
No, unfortunately, one of the instructions and directives that we were given is everyone had to be enrolled. So we had to enroll everybody into WIOA. So that's really, really hurting us in performance.
Is that something that is explainable? This is probably more for Karma. Let's say that after the further research, it's determined that for whatever reason, they're not really involved, because let's assume that they just wanted the way the COVID money, pardon me. Can that be explained at all in any kind of narrative, or does it just count as a yay or nay?
Let me understand your question. So let's take it through. So the state made this money available, right? And the intent of the state making it available was two reasons. One, for existing WIOA clients that were having challenges with COVID and finding a job, they had access to more supportive service funds outside of our regular supportive service. Two, for people in the community that was not familiar with WIOA, but needed access to funding and also workforce services because they lost their job, it was a way to recruit people into WIOA. So at the end of the day, you still needed to treat these people like you would anybody else walking through the door for WIOA. So no, the state is not going to lift it or not agree to it, because in the state directive provided, it said they had to be enrolled in WIOA. At a training that said they had to be in WIOA, we created a policy and a desk procedure that both said that they had to be enrolled in WIOA.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's helpful as well. So even if, let me make sure I understand it, even if the intention of the participant is to get COVID funding, the provider still needed to provide the comprehensive services per WIOA.
That's right. And they were going to go in your numbers. Anyone enrolled in WIOA goes in our number. That's the rule of thumb every time.
That's helpful. Okay.
So Gloria, thank you. So I it sounds like the recommendation is to continue to move forward with the additional research by calling these individuals to find out a little more about why they have not engaged, why they're not considered active. Even though their intent may have been just to obtain the COVID money. And then we can make some decisions. This requires some additional research. So if the committee is good with that, we'll move forward with that recommendation to Karma, that she will reach out to these individuals either through survey or via phone to inquire of them and to learn more about their own unique situation with, you know, accessing the services that we owe as services. Is that what I'm hearing from the committee?
Yes, so that's fine. That's why we went ahead and provided those little comments on there to let you know that this client is still either in training or they are still actively job searching, whatever's going on with that client. But there are some that are not replying back to us, and we do follow up with them each month. So they're not replying because that's all they came in for, was because they just wanted the COVID funds.
Okay.
So that's fine.
Great. Thank you so much, Gloria.
You're very welcome.
Okay. All right.
That's all for my discussion items today. I don't know if the committee had anything else to discuss, but those are the things that I wanted to bring to the table.
Anything else from the committee?
Yeah, I just want to share at the Business Services Committee, it was brought up that there was a request for additional orientation. I believe it was from Jesse Benron. So if you ever have a date on that, please feel free to share. And then also it was brought up that Terry's group is going to be doing a 101, a Web 101 event. And we had a conversation about perhaps, depending on how that goes, developing some kind of an open house type of an event. So I'm curious to know about that as well. So if you have a date for that,
I'll get that over to you after.
Thank you. And I got your email and I'm interested, so I'll send you a response.
Okay, very good. Okay. All right. Anything else anyone wishes to discuss before we adjourn? And do
work,
we...
team. Good work.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have the schedule. So with that said, the meeting is adjourned, and thank you all for joining us, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye. Good day.